Oh yes, all right. Today's Facebook post. There's not much need to reiterate or expand upon that particularly. The nature of discovery is more to the point than what one says or writes about the nature of discovery. Though what you say or write about the nature of discovery can be can be a bridge or an on-ramp for a certain quality of consciousness or certain quality of present appreciation or engagement. If one has some contemplative experience, has developed, you could say, a more intimate appreciation of the nature of thought and association, of the nature of sensual identity, then over time, through the cultivation of contemplative practice or exercise, one begins to discover a certain quality of space. Or more appropriately, you could refer to it as pause. Not those kinds. If and as present experience is bullied by knowledge or memory or reference or belief or superstition, that would be no pause. The absence of pause would be filling one's mind with ideation, discursive reference, planning, strategizing, considering, entertaining oneself, solving problems, perhaps. So the movement of reference, language, thought, memory, takes up the space. One's attention, we could say, becomes qualified by content and context. You could say the refrain of what's going to happen to me, you know, is a, you could say, underlying orientation to imagination and the movement of content and context. Well, if one discovers the nature of pause, then it's possible to recalibrate and back away, if you will, take a few baby steps back from assertion or projection, knowledge, which also, you know, in the, let's say, more avid seeker, would also include presumptions about the nature of suffering and the nature of whatever realization might be. Because the nature of suffering as it's been felt and recalled, or even the anticipation or urgency or fondness for liberated understanding or enlightenment, is also an object. An object of anticipation or of knowledge or familiarity. Magical hopefulness. And that, you know, quality of seeking can turn into an appetite for spiritual practice, religious or spiritual knowledge, association with one or many groups, the pursuit of the milestones of achievement that those groups may express blatantly or subtly. What if a quality of discovery could occur or unfold where the appetite of self and the spontaneous arousal of psychological time, the attraction and aversion that accompanies what's going to happen to me, if that could, would lapse? Then we can sense what might be referred to as present experience without reference, without time. Having no position, not suffering from the burden of prior secular, religious, or spiritual knowledge, as the habit of mind, the habit of association and projection becomes naturally, organically quiescent. As we relax from the reflex to promote and project identity, then we not only discover the quality of pause, but we learn how to rest, excuse me, or reside as pause. Here there is no knowledge of anything. There's no claim that need be made, that could be made. There's no reference to prior experience, good, bad, or indifferent. And there's no urgency to heal or adjust or process or promulgate from the vantage point of prior experience. There's no need for remedial instruction. What to do with or about oneself. One could say magically, through no particular effort, the existential angst that accompanies the movement of thought, memory, projection, psychological time, is assuaged or ameliorated without intervention. We don't fix anything. We don't understand anything. There's no comparison to someone else's, enlightenment or someone else's extraordinary mutant powers. Whatever reality is or isn't, is unqualified. And such discovery is autonomous. There's no need for validation. Proving anything to anyone, including oneself. Whatever this is or isn't, it already is or isn't that. If one discovers how to relax and or release, though again not through effort or vow or commitment, relax and release from the incessant nature of orientation. The referential nature of mind. Well, then, as in now, there's this, as it is. You can say anything you'd like to say about it, and we do, of course, but you needn't say anything about it. But that's not the same as making a vow of silence, either. The appearance of oneself, sensually and otherwise, is by its own accord absolutely unqualified. So the contemplation, if you will, of a certain kind of inquiry or dialogue or discussion, discovery, salon, like these, is to simply take notice of the unqualified nature of present experience. And you could say, be willing to let it take you. If we want to call this Brahman, okay. If you want to call it whatever you want to call it, rock on. If you build a faith around it, you're really building a faith around yourself. If you promulgate, project, you know, the presence of otherness as God, you're really building an orientation, moat, castle, around the imagination of yourself. Discovering the unqualified nature of present experience, there is no reflex to create God, to name this, to be celebratory or obedient, devotional, to purify. All of that is hallucination. There's no reason to stop doing anything. Or to emulate some kind of divine zombie-ishness. It's not about how to behave or not behave. How and what to think or what not to think, whether you're on board with a cosmology or against it, whether you're agnostic or atheistic. The alchemy of consciousness is not dependent upon philosophy, cosmology, or spiritual experience. There's no proper or improper way to think about this, since the slightest touch of thinking and thought is instantly apparitional, instantly hallucinatory. So one doesn't use the, you could say, miraculous, magical city or gift of thinking, the capacity for reference and representation, naming, you could say, in contrast to that, one feels what it feels like to feel what this feels like. Primary relationship or interface with whatever sentient consciousness and life is the feeling tone of whatever experience is or isn't. The vibrancy, the vitality. The simplicity. The unadorned nature of consciousness without object or subject. One feels how it feels to feel how this feels. Without adornment, without object, without qualification. We'd like to call this mindfulness. Well, that's cool. Maybe a subtle or nuanced quality or vibration, to use a New Age word, of mindfulness. To be mindful of something, and or to be the practitioner of that mindfulness, is already too qualified. It's already suffering, you could say, from subject and object, that there is a inherent quality of consciousness or attention that is capable of being mindful, aware of something that appears in it. But if that quality of attention the hum of being were to simply abide or rest or enjoy itself, then there is no, call it activized or actualized mindfulness. There is, to be bold about it, the presence of liberated understanding. Which is no understanding at all. No magical powers need apply. You don't have to walk on water, heal the sick, be ecstatic, broadcast wireless inebriation. Have sage advice. Or be able to ameliorate suffering. You don't need to demonstrate anything or be of use to anybody. You don't have to be right about anything. Or convincing. And you don't have to take Jack Kornfield's advice either. That's a relief. There's no need to commit to anything. Certain kind of clothing or relationship with money, people, genitalia, food. I mean, you know, being spiritual these days is a billion-dollar industry. And most of it, since we like to generalize with aplomb, is aimed at the animal rescue business, at the amelioration of suffering. When you engage or indulge in your one's personal history, misgivings, whatever combination of violations you've suffered through childhood or adulthood, then invariably we bring along for the ride this package of identification and regret and sorrow, rage, and insecurity, all of which have profound somatic markers, symptoms. And so we want to heal our ideas. We want an unpleasant idea of ourselves, a painful, bracing reactive codependent packet of imagination that I call myself to be ameliorated, healed, smoothed over as it affects my ability to communicate, to be expressive, to be in relationship, to make a living. That's the animal rescue business, geared toward some form of healing or amelioration, the cultivation of abundance, the cultivation of security, having to do with my ideas about myself and myself being my body, my person, my stuff. We want to feel better about the way we feel other than now. We commit ourselves to 1 or 100 paths of purification, ritual, amelioration, magical thinking to cultivate that. Best of luck. Make it so. Number one. But you see, if we bring ourselves along for the ride, the imagination of myself as a product of pleasant and unpleasant circumstances, needs, desires, wants, and entitlements. Well, I remain a victim of hallucination. Perhaps I do this voluntarily, so I remain not necessarily a victim of, but a companion to, an agreeable subscriber to hallucination, to temporality, sensuality, future, past. Hungering for an intervention, hungering for a divine resolution to existential confusion and angst. I'm suggesting a companion reality, if you will. Companion approach, not merely to dismiss the intelligence and urgency for cultivating healing and wellness in all respects. The simple discovery that present experience is unqualified. If this is a dream, what is real? The awareness of it? That is commonly the case. To launch into a certain kind of didactic, like a question and answer might be, well, you have to take some kind of a position. You got to start somewhere. Why not start with, if this is a dream, what is real? The awareness of it? Well, maybe it's not a dream. Where does the question go then? The notion of dream or real or awareness are, well, they're, you know, big round political buttons. Vote for dream in 2018. Vote for real in 2018. You see, we don't know what this is. It needn't be anything, neither dream nor real, or dream and real, or dream at the expense of real, or real at the expense of dream. And even awareness as a tool, as an implication of consciousness, also becomes an object. Not just the word, but one's relationship with presence, referring to it as real or dream or awareness, becomes another field of objects and a form of comparative religion. In other words, we've qualified whatever this is or isn't, and I'm not saying because I don't know. So if it's unqualified, I don't know what dream means. I don't know what real means as a companion or contrary notion. And though you could say, fuck me, there sure feels like awareness, whether it's mine or not. It might not be. If we go in search of an answer, correct or creative, with respect to the perplexity of present experience, well, we're too late, because we have to use some kind of anchor, some kind of reference system, language system or symbol, to lay down the presumption in order to set the equation up for being solved. How does this feel? We're not speaking sentimentally, of course. How does this feel if I have no qualification? And were there a collapse, cessation of the reflex to qualify, I wouldn't have any such question. I wouldn't be able to compare one idea, one meme, one projection to another in hopes of discerning, you know, some kind of palatable spiritual hierarchy. That's gone. Mind is hierarchical by virtue of its, you know, magical capacity to discern and qualify, measure, compare, which we do so well. What does this feel like if we don't want to say refrain, because that could be too effortful or contentious, adversarial? Just feeling this, one's awareness, or their awareness, can notice if there's noticing to be done. How this feels without qualification. And that shouldn't be too terribly difficult, because that's all this really is anyway. The presence and nature of mind and association is a, well, kind of a superimposition. You could say mind wants to take credit for being, and being doesn't mind. Does the nature of present experience, whatever it is or isn't, really become better or worse or qualified or more reliant if I insist that it's a dream, or anyone does, or insist that it's real, Yes. Mind is the one thing we could say about mind is the reflex to figure out, the reflex to create an index where there need not be any index. You know, in the decades-long or lifetimes-long process of evaluating, practicing mindfulness, vipassana, asking for questions and doing the hokey pokey, we might have a regrettable or adversarial relationship with the mind's swift capacity to steal us away from whatever presence is into flights of fancy. One can say as the contemplative journey matures and unfolds, whether in fits and starts or over a long slope or through a unexpected jolt of kundalini, the emphasis might change so that instead of having an adversarial, regrettable, contentious, or urgency to control mind, you can't even find it. You can't whip it up or conjure it if you want to. Such is the nature of present solubility, present inebriation, that is no longer an adversarial relationship with mind. Mind's not working. Reverie replaces knowledge. Reverie replaces thought. It's a wonderful insight, may I refer to it as that, as mind is an object and objects don't exist. But we can see the frustration in that such a succinct view becomes another object. To make claims about exist or not exist, or objects or not, of course we have to jump back into the paradoxical chaos of whether we can say, you know, anything of a lasting value or to be taken as some kind of literal spiritual cosmology. Reverie makes no claim and takes no prisoners. The value, if there is one, or a salon conversation, is to explore the effervescent and referential nature of mind in real time, in what you can say is looks like relationship, exploring together, as Krishnamurti would often say. Shared attention, shared vulnerability, shared interest, availability. Has a palpable aroma. You could say there's an amplification. You could say it's an agreement to be vigilant in a relaxed, non-harming, non-judgmental, undefended way. The vigilance isn't based on refusal. Vigilance isn't based on assertion. One is simply interested to discover. And that interest, consciousness, awareness, okay, Vishnu, fine. You could say that interest recalibrates the habit to project and promote, to refer to knowledge. Presumption or expectation. It's a sorbet. It's a palate cleanser. Even the gift or flame of attention can become too demanding, you know, too much pressure to have or sustain a certain quality of experience. Mind is familiar with, you know, the one-liner, right? The spiritual one-liner. But I would suggest we're more malleable than that. We're crazier than that. We're more irrational in a playful, sensual way than having a spiritual conclusion. We are the living theater. This is the autopoiesis of the living theater. Here it is. Whatever reality might be, consciousness might be, well, here it is. Though we could be seen as a species of dumb, fuck, selfish, malevolent, misogynist, misanthropes, driving at top speed into the extinction wall, yeah, that's cool, but hey, it's acting. This is the living theater. Nobody's lines are memorized. The stage is malleable and changes with the weather, with anthropogenic climate disruption, with tornadoes in the Midwest and lethal dust storms in India. We're living right on the surface of continental shelves floating on, yes, molten core, aiming for Mars. No one has a need have a conclusion of what to do about this or that. It's easy for us to become combative, contentious. Proud of ourselves, dismissive of others. With deepening intimacy, innocence replaces certainty, reverie replaces refusal. Perhaps we get a taste of nonviolence. Well, thanks everyone for chatting a little bit, setting the tone for some conversation. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here. See you next time.